Hey everyone, welcome in. It's another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshall. It's a little bit of a super show today. Not just because the Super Bowl is coming up and we're going to talk about it, but because we have some help on hand. Producer Nate Vaughn is here, per usual. But so is Vikings.com's Craig Peters. He's in the house.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad you are here. We brought you in for a couple of reasons. One is you were at the Senior Bowl. So we had you on to preview the Senior Bowl a couple weeks ago. Now we're going to have you on to review the Senior Bowl in a little bit. But also, it is the pinnacle of the NFL season. So Nate and I want some help talking about the game, the Super Bowl.
I would love to.
So we think you can do that.
Love to.
Okay, yeah. Good. You ready for this, Nate?
I'm ready. I'm all set.
Okay. We're going to talk Senior Bowl. We're going to talk Super Bowl. But first, we're going to talk a little bit of Roger Goodell. He had his State of the League address in Houston on Wednesday, which he does every single year. A lot of people who tune into the podcast are people who would tune into that and would care about that. So we're going to break it down a little bit here, Craig and Nate. First off, no questions about the Vikings, which I think is good.
It's not the worst thing to be not mentioned.
Right. Hey, you haven't built your stadium yet. Are you going to move to L.A.? Nothing like that. No, your roof collapsed. So how was the protocol for that? What was that? Nothing like that.
My favorite part was Sam Farmer from the L.A. Times, I believe, asking for most years he's asked, when will Los Angeles finally get a team back?
Right.
And this year he joked that he should now ask, when will Los Angeles stop getting teams?
Right. You're right, yeah, because they've gotten so many. Yeah, they've gotten two this offseason. So that's good. Number two, Thursday Night Football. We talk a lot about Thursday Night Football just because we work in the business and it's an unusual thing when you play on Thursday, but we played on Thursday twice this year. Commissioner Goodell said that the league is committed to Thursday Night Football, which if you read between the lines, it probably means they're making money on it, which is why they're committed to it. But there's a lot of discussion about it with regard to the quality of games and to player safety and all that. So that's why the question is brought up. The interesting thing that I took, though, from his comments, guys, was, Goodell noted that every team played on Thursday Night Football this past season and that they may reevaluate that and maybe not every team will end up playing on Thursday night.
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone wanted Browns-Ravens, but they got it this past year. I do want to credit our fans that came out to US Bank Stadium, marquee matchup against the Cowboys. I think it was one of the best Thursday night football games this year, and you can even extend that beyond just because of the stakes were so good, the atmosphere was so good. You have a team trying to rally for Coach Zimmer, unable to be there that night, and it was just a crazy vibe. It's the most incredible game that I've covered in which the team I've worked for has lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good and bad.
In the regular season, of course.
Right.
And then so good and bad, but I mean the fans really brought the atmosphere. You can tell that they were coming turned up, and the players do like playing in prime time, and you can see that on Sunday Night Football too.
Yeah.
So, but there's a lot of adjustments, as you know, that have to happen to make Thursday night work, and so we'll see if we're picked.
All right.
And it's been cool from a league side of it, seeing the kind of stuff that they want to try on Thursday night, like the color rush stuff. You can kind of take a peek into some of the non-conventional stuff that the NFL is trying to think of to keep the game relevant and in households as often as they can.
Yep.
Rather than just Sundays.
Yeah. They've also tried to do as many divisional games as they can do, probably for some competitive balance reasons, but also for travel time for the road teams. So it'll be interesting to see if they redo their formula for Thursday night games, who plays in them and when they play in them and what kind of games they are. Listen, I love the NFL, so the more days with NFL games, for me, the better. And I work in the NFL, so the more times there are games not on Sundays, the better for me because I have a better chance of being able to watch that game. But I also understand the concerns that you have with player safety, especially later in the year and all that. So just an interesting talker from that press conference. Another one, Commissioner Goodell, bullish on the two probationary rule changes we had this year, where two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties equal an ejection, and then touchbacks on kickoffs going out to the 25-yard line. The commissioner seemed to be favorable to both of those, and he said that the owners will vote on those to make them permanent or not this offseason. No reason to think that either of those won't stick, right, next year?
I would expect both to pass, and I would expect a little bit more clarification on the kind of behavior that might result in an ejection.
Yeah. Nate, touchbacks out to the 25 on kickoffs?
They're probably happy with how it worked out, and if nothing else, you know, it's – obviously an effort to keep the game safer, the kickoffs being one of the more dangerous plays in football. But also, they were probably pleasantly surprised with how much buzz there was around teams like us, where it's like a strategy thing. Like, do you just kick it out of the back of the end zone automatically, or do you try to get a little more airtime and see if you can pin them deeper than the 25?
Yeah, I saw that. Speaking of this rule change on kickoffs, tease alert. Craig's going to talk about that in the Senior Bowl review, because he was reading between the lines, and he may have seen the NFL
dangerous, but I
tip
did.
Its hand on a rule change on kickoffs. Also, I saw a report that concussions were down this year in the NFL by 11.5% or something like that, so that's good news.
One adverse thing that happened, the Detroit game here, the touchback at the 25, that's an extra five yards. So 58-yarder from Prater instead of 63.
Right. That would have been – those 5 yards could have made a difference. I mean, it could have made a difference in the decision-making on the play calls. Yeah. It looked like the field goal would have been good from 103 yards.
And I actually covered the game where Prater hit the 64-yarder in Denver. Yes, wow. When I was still with the Titans.
Okay.
So it hit the crossbar and bounced through.
Yeah, of course it did.
We appreciate you bringing that game up, though, Craig. Thank you.
Oakland, I mean, I didn't know that this was happening, and then all of a sudden it's happening, and we know the teams already. Oakland and Patriots are playing in Mexico City next year.
Yes, yes. Liga had a successful game there this year between the Texans and the Raiders, and Oakland will be the host team, and the Patriots will go down there, and that's the largest crowd the Patriots have ever played in front of. I believe it was in 1998.
Wow. Okay.
When they went down there for a game. So Mr. Kraft said they were excited. The Raiders are obviously excited as well.
Let's do a quick power rankings of where you could play an international game. We have London. We have Mexico City. I would think like Germany is going to be coming up soon. Where else might the league play a game that's realistic, do we think? Canada. They've played games in Canada. That's international.
Yeah, absolutely. Played in China.
China.
I don't know if that's...
That's probably something that will happen. Japan, they've played in Japan.
Yeah, the Tokyo Dome.
Right?
Okay.
They've played in, I think they've played in one of the Norwegian countries, the Vikings have.
The Vikings played in Sweden.
In Sweden.
Exhibition only.
So give me, like, your top three. We're not going to denigrate any cities here and do the bottom part of the power rankings. Let's do a top three. I'm putting... Well, I've done a London game in 2013. Sure. We played over there. It was amazing. So just as you would say, hey, you know what? The Patriots have been to the Super Bowl, 3,000 times with Brady and Belichick. I'm picking the Patriots because I've already seen it done. So London's number one for me. Okay. I'm putting China number two and Mexico City number three.
Okay.
Those are my top three.
Let's see. You said London won?
London's one for me, yeah.
That would probably be top for me, too.
Okay.
Partly because I haven't been there
right.
for a London game, so that would be cool. I'd put China, too, and probably Mexico City.
Okay, so we're the same, correct?
Yeah, I don't know if there are any other venues that I could add to, having never experienced international football. I do know the Oilers and Cowboys – at the height of both of those teams played in the Tokyo Dome in an exhibition game 20 plus years ago. So that would have been fun to see too. But I think that what's great is there are so many areas where the game is growing and the sport is growing. And I think that with what we've seen from the additional German players in league over there is that would be an ideal spot to play a game as well.
Yeah, and that will be happening. And I'm all for that, you know, go and get, you know, what's Germany good at? They're good at sausage, right? I mean, I like food like that. I feel like Germany is like good, like comfort food territory, yeah. You know, so I love comfort food.
Probably
I'll go to Germany.
Some tasty beverages there too.
Right. I think Mexico City is one that most people would put like way down at the bottom. I have it in my top three. I thought I would be the contrarian, but Nate has it in his top three as well. Mexico City, and this is the way I view it. With Mexico City and China, I just don't see myself booking and organizing a trip on my own to go to China or Mexico City. So to go there as part of the international series with an NFL team is a great way to do it. That's why they're in my power rankings, because I just don't see, you know, the Wabi clan going there on a, you know, a family vacation, at least not, you know, in the near future. CBA negotiations. I mean, anyone who followed the league or worked in the league in 2010 and 11 does not want to see CBA negotiations in an outline for a podcast. But it got brought up in Goodell's State of the League presser. Are we almost getting to that point already?
Well, the good news is I think they're trying to be proactive about things and, okay. and avoid a recurrence of what happened during that kind of dicey time.
Yeah, wound up in a lockout.
Yeah. We didn't quite know exactly how futures were going to shake out. That was right after my first season in the league, so it was kind of like wait and see. And,
yeah.
Just go from there. But he pivoted to negotiation yesterday after being asked about a relaxation of medical marijuana policies for players. And it's getting trickier because some states have legalized, including states with teams including states that have been Super Bowl participants recently in Colorado and Washington. So as that continues to spread in states where NFL teams play, that'll continue to be a question every year. I think it's been a question every year. I've paid attention to this press conference for several years now, and but he used that because they can't to pivot to the CBA because they would have to address that within the CBA.
Got it. Yes. So very calculated and deliberate approach by the commissioner commenting on that issue is what you're saying, basically.
Yeah, I would say. And then if it's a way to go ahead and say, hey, we'd really like to go ahead and start talking about this. You know, I mean, the current deal goes through 2020. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're going to make substantial changes, it might not be the worst thing in the world to have a lot of T's crossed and I's dotted.
Right. Well, all the teams that we play, I think that it should be legal for them to use marijuana right before the game because I think that would really increase our chances of winning.
So specifically that, within an hour of kickoff?
Right, yeah, like right at 11 o'clock. How about right when the injury report comes out? Those guys can light up. All right, lastly on this, speeding up the game. Now, there are lots of topics that we can bring up, including the one we just talked about, and you can get a really good balance of debate on both sides and someone can play devil's advocate, and we can have a real spirited discussion because there are lots of different opinions. There are not a lot of different opinions on this one. Right. Everyone wants the game to be sped up and for there to be less breaks in the action, right? And that's something that Goodell talked about.
I believe there would be a wholehearted consensus. I think some of our games are so close down the stretch that I don't mind that extra break in the fourth quarter to write a little bit more for the immediate post. But I think that they experimented with a change in commercial breaks late in the season this year.
Yeah.
And I think that they are convinced that they can accomplish what they want to get accomplished with fewer commercial breaks. And I think a phrase he used was less is more.
And I'm all for that. I think the one that really gets anyone who's ever watched a game on TV is, hey, a team just scored a touchdown, got the extra point, commercial. Hey, we're back for kickoff. Hey, we just kicked off, commercial, like that. I think if you just got rid of that and just put that commercial somewhere else in the game, I think that would almost alleviate the problem. But if they just want to eliminate the commercial break altogether, I'm fine with that.
That would be fine, too. And I saw something combing the web today is like a pitch that the two-minute warning is antiquated. What are we warning about anyway?
Yeah.
Look out, there's 2 minutes left.
Like they need a different buzzer in the stadium. When we get to the 2 minute warning, it's not just the referee whistle. It's like an air siren.
Although that
might not be the greatest thing in the world, given.
You get the speed up music like in the old school Super Mario Brothers.
That's a better idea. That's a much better idea.
I think that's the solution. Yeah.
So that's the Goodell presser. The annual Roger Goodell State of the League presser has happened, as it usually does right before the Super Bowl. My other favorite pre-Super Bowl event is going to happen on Saturday. That's the announcement of the incoming Hall of Fame class. There will be no former Vikings per se in this year's class, but could be interesting to see who gets in.
Yeah, I don't think most people would view Morten Andersen as the Viking, even though he was here for a year. So, it's kind of like other memories associated.
But we've had our run as of late, the past few years. So
that's a great point.
We're giving other teams an opportunity to appreciate their players.
We just had Mick Tinglehoff go in recently. Yep. That was great to see. Now, hopefully, maybe Jim Marshall.
Yep. That would be awesome,
same
too.
Same route.
Senior committee nominee. Yeah, that'd be awesome. All right, so that's it for the Goodell presser, for the pre-Super Bowl stuff. It was National Signing Day yesterday. Before we get into the Senior Bowl, where we talk about the ends of some college football players' careers, let's talk about the beginning of a lot of careers, because you guys both are invested in a college football team emotionally. So how did National Signing Day go for you guys?
Too emotionally, probably.
Okay. Well, Nate,
I would concur.
Nate, Iowa?
Yeah.
How'd they
do? That's my squad. They did all right.
Okay.
It's one thing they always preach, which, other teams could probably take a jab at, but is that rankings don't mean much because they're very much about developing the talent that they get.
Okay.
Whether that's in-state talent, which a lot of that is big, beefy
linemen. Corn-fed.
Yeah, yeah. Centers and guards. And maybe turn a high school quarterback into a tackle or something like that. but they did get one. Five-star recruit.
Okay.
So that was good. He's his dad played for the Hawkeyes, so that was probably
a legacy.
A legacy recruit. So that was probably an in for him. Okay. So everybody's excited about that. But other than that, he's pretty. They downplay a lot of that kind of stuff. But
not surprising, given it's Kirk Ferentz.
Kirk Ferentz
from the Bill Belichick tree of thinking, right?
Yeah, and to their credit, a lot of what they preach is true, especially when it comes to offensive linemen and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They do, I joked about it, but they do take high school quarterbacks and turn them into
first
round left and right tackles in the NFL. So I guess until they prove me wrong, I'm good with Kirk. What about you, Craig?
All right, Craig, Mississippi State.
It's amazing to me how much signing day has grown in the past decade and the marketing that goes into it. Having started my career covering high school sports, I covered the first few signings and players in our area in North Georgia, and the way that it's just kind of become a monster. So I try not to really get too into things before they arrive on campus.
Got it.
And I think Dan Mullen has a great record of developing players that are in the 2 or 3 star range, Dak Prescott among them.
Was he?
Yes.
He was not a five-star guy?
He was not a five-star guy. LSU made a late push, I believe, as the story goes, but Mississippi State had offered him early, and he honored that commitment and that bond. And
cool.
Things really blossomed for him there. He was also an early enrollee, so that was another thing that Coach Mullen pointed out yesterday is instead of guys that put on the hats, which, it's such an exciting time. You can't hate on kids for being excited about continuing their dreams, and I hope no one thinks I'm doing that, but there are players on campuses already that were in workout programs yesterday morning because they early enrolled, and they're already on campus. They finished up their high school requirements, and you're seeing that, and then they go ahead and get started on their coursework, and then they have that approach going through college too. So that's kind of interesting to me too. But I did notice that Mississippi State really marketed its class, both on social media, on digital billboards and things like that. And it's overwhelming for me, but I guess that's kind of the going rate right now.
Okay. Well, I'm more into Groundhog's Day than National Signing Day. And it was bad news this year. He saw his shadow, 6 more weeks of winter. So we have that.
Wait, 6 weeks? Yes. I'll take that.
Six additional weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're thinking because it's more like
from
12
today
because it's winter weather even after the 6 weeks. Yeah. You're gonna get hardier and hardier, Craig, the longer you're here. Okay. Don't worry about it. Nate and I are already used to it.
Yeah.
We grew up with it. All right, let's be quick and do a Senior Bowl recap. And I say quick not because it's unimportant, but because there are lots of important things to get to, and we want to get to as many of them as we can. So let's be pithy in our Senior Bowl recap. You were down there all week, Craig, at the Senior Bowl, so you got an up-close look at everything. You talked to a lot of people, the players themselves, but also some national media who were there covering the game. You talked to Mike Zimmer, George Edwards, Jamal Stevenson. So you talked to a lot of people. I'm sure you came away with a lot. Let's start with the Zim interview. You interviewed him for about 5.5 minutes down in Mobile. What'd you take away from that?
The refreshment in his voice.
Yeah.
I think that 2016 was such a rough year, and you could just hear it as he was answering every question. And we talked a little bit about the Senior Bowl and a little bit about the staff changes he's made. And but with every answer, you could hear this refreshment in his voice that he always talks about getting up off the mat, and he's up off the mat.
Cool. National media interviews, a couple of the people you talked to, anything that stands out?
Fortunate to talk to Ian Rappaport, Alex Flanagan, Mike Garafolo, Albert Breer. So it was great to get such a unique array of perspectives. Also Tom Pelissero, who you sat down with for an extended cut. And
right
then,
before.
And several of those people we talked to actually asked Commissioner Goodell questions yesterday.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see them and get their kind of vibe on the Vikings. And the consensus was that what this team encountered this year is unlike they've seen any other team try to deal with, and they believe that it won't happen again.
Right. It's one of those weird deals where when it's happening to you, everyone is killing you and saying you can't overcome it and you're doomed because of it. But then when it's over and we're getting ready to restart the race, they almost use that as a credit to you. Like, you went through that last year. It almost makes you a sentimental favorite in that regard. So it'll be interesting to see. We'll get a temperature on that at the combine.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, when we talk to some of those guys. And if you remember last year, a lot of people were bullish on the Vikings. And when a team is the subject of that and then it doesn't work out, a lot of times the next year people are afraid to get back on your bandwagon. But I think because of the sympathetic factor, there might be some people who are ready to remain on the Vikings bandwagon. It'll be interesting to see how that happens. You had a piece, 7 observations from the combine. From the Senior Bowl. So fans can go to the site to check out all 7, but I'm going to run you through 4 of them, I think.
Okay.
3 of them. Yep, 4 of them right here. Toledo running back Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, he ran the ball really well. 14 carries, 118 yards, very productive. I think they may have turned to him a little bit earlier than they meant to because Corey Clement from Wisconsin left the game pretty early. But in a game like that, you know, you show flashes, you show brilliance. He had gains of 12, 20, 43, and 18. So those are nice chunk runs, explosive plays, maximizing the opportunities. And it seemed like the staff coached by the Bears kind of stuck with him once he got the hot hand.
Yeah. And he's not first-round pick guy. He's right.
I haven't seen him in that list. So
Okay. So kind of an interesting name maybe to watch.
Productive in college, a productive offense. Had a good week by multiple sources.
Yep. Offensive line.
Yeah. What's funny is how quickly injuries struck the offensive line. I shouldn't say funny maybe, but it's just kind of like continuing.
Our season?
Yeah. So We did catch up with Connor McDermott, younger brother of Kevin McDermott, and out of UCLA, left tackle. He played left tackle, right tackle the first day, and then they slid him over to left tackle after Forrest Lamp from Western Kentucky went down.
Yeah.
We also caught up with Isaac Asiata, a cousin of Matt Asiata, and he also got nicked and was unable to finish the week after Tuesday's practice. They kind of rotated and replaced. They tried to stay with the same combinations through the game, which makes sense because it's such a short turnaround. I think both of the coaching staffs were trying to give evaluators as many one-on-one looks and practices as possible.
Yeah.
Some combo blocks. But yeah, so about 20 offensive linemen down there. And, you know, it's a great introduction for them to get in front of evaluators. And that's a little bit more useful probably than anything an O-lineman will do at the combine.
Right. No doubt about it. That's something we hear from coaches every year. And that's the interesting part about the Senior Bowl is, you know, the scouts have been going to practices and watching these guys work, and they've put game tape on. The coaches, this is their first exposure to these guys. Mm-hmm. And in 3 months, they're going to have to be experts on all of them. So Kansas State edge rusher Jordan Willis, he impressed a little bit.
Yeah, he flashed coming around the edge. All day long, edge rushers seem to do fairly well. You know, there's no blitzing. There's no stunting even. So the speed move around the edge is your best way to pressure a quarterback probably, and you get a lot of matchups, and when you win matchups, and they, you know, they're not like really asking the running backs to or the tight ends to chip that much or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to show a guy's skill set coming off the edge.
Yeah.
And he forced fumbles, which is a great trait to have.
That's a big thing for Dan Quinn. His thing is it's all about the ball, right?
Yeah.
So there's a player who's living that out at the Senior Bowl. Lastly, I read the column, Craig, 7 observations from the Senior Bowl, and I picked up something that you put in there, and that's why people listening should go and read your stuff. A hint of a rule change for the NFL based on something you saw at the Senior Bowl.
Yes, so they only do 2 kickoffs for that game.
Right.
Which is 2 more than the Pro Bowl now, but...
such a Craig Peters comment right there. I love it. Yep. Yep.
So, well, I just wanted to see Cordero return a kickoff.
So did we all.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all did.
So, anyway, they did kickoffs to start each half. Mm-hmm. And instead of having the coverage team line up 5 yards off the line of scrimmage and get a running start, they had all of those players line up on the 35. So it slows down or decreases the amount of momentum that I guess can be built up. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see. They try to use that game as a lab to see potential effects. The opening kickoff was returned nicely by Cooper Kupp. I believe it was about 38 yards or so.
Yeah.
And then the second one resulted in a touchback. So not a huge sample size to measure impact. But and the executive director of the Senior Bowl, Phil Savage, has been really great working with the league and trying to implement any changes or explorations of things. It's a perfect lab.
Yeah.
And so they did that this year. He hinted that be on the lookout for this, and sure enough, the kickoffs were altered.
Cool. Alrighty. So that's what we got for the Senior Bowl. For more from the Senior Bowl, go to Vikings.com and check out all the stuff that that Craig and company have cranked out. Let's move on to the current Vikings. Xavier Rhodes, Nate, you got some sound here about our Pro Bowl corner, Xavier Rhodes. What are we going to listen to?
Yeah, he's down at the Super Bowl, which a lot of players do. They make their way down there for the extensive days of media talking to NFL players from around the league about the Super Bowl and about their seasons. So Xavier Rhodes hung out with a few guys from the NFL Network, talking about the season, talking a little bit about signing day, and talking a little bit about, you know, what he thinks of his status as a corner in the NFL.
And we are live at Super Bowl Live. It's NFL Now Live, presented by Fios by Verizon. You see the highlights there from a Viking to a Viking. Let's go Norland High. And it was, I don't know how many years ago, that our guest Xavier Rhodes had to make the decision. But today is National Signing Day.
Oh, yeah.
You had a choice in front of you, Xavier. You chose Florida State, but I know you had multiple offers. Maybe walk us through, because here we are on the day that it is National Signing Day, what that day was like for you.
Oh, man, that was a big day. You know, just sitting there, have to make the decision, because you have to make the right decision at that moment, because you want to get to this point in your life when you want to achieve that goal again to the NFL. So you have to make sure, like, that school fits your playing style. So sitting there trying to figure out everything, how can it help you get to the NFL, the best way to get the education, and that was one of the hardest decisions I've made.
How much pressure did you get from family? Because you know everybody's in your ear. Coaches are saying this. Family wants this. You know, your sister wants that. Like, how hard was that? Or were you just like, I know what school I want to hit pick?
It was actually hard because I'm from Miami, so my family is Hurricane fans.
Okay.
So I always wanted to be the oddball. I always wanted to be that guy. Just go the opposite way. So I was sitting there and I was like, you know what? I'm going to just go to the Seminoles. I'm going to go to Florida State. And my grandma and my mom and my aunt was like, what?
And I wish more kids would do what you did. I mean, you were a standout receiver and athlete, and you recognize the talent that's needed at cornerback. Not enough defensive backs. All the kids want to be receivers. You flip to the other side, and here you are, arguably the best cornerback in the NFL this season.
Yes, man. It took a lot of hard work, dedication. You know, my mentor, Terrell Buckley, helped me with that. Making a transition, giving me the right technique and knowing the knowledge of the game, what to look for down the distance and everything. You know, he helped me a lot with that.
You know, it almost feels like it's 2 or 3 years old, the conversation about shutdown corner and who's the best shutdown corner. That phrase has kind of gone away. Is there such a thing at this point from what your experience was? Like Money says, not trying to flatter you, it feels like you and Marcus Peters neck and neck now. It's shutdown corner.
I would say yes. I can agree to that. You know, this year has been a great year for me. You know, I put in a lot of time in the offseason, working on the little details, what I needed to work on from last season. And I feel like I came out on top.
Did you know that it was going to come like this? You know, we talked last week, and we were talking about being in that rotation now where, you know, you started from, you know, growing up wanting to play in the NFL and to be in the conversation as the corner. There are only two positions I think people really care about who's the best, the quarterback position and the cornerback position. You're that guy. Have you owned it? Have you accepted it?
Yes. You know, like I told you last time, looking at the stats, and it's telling me I'm the lockdown corner. I mean, numbers don't lie. You know, I'm going by numbers.
Oh, he's such a politician. I didn't say it. The numbers said it.
You look at the numbers and the passer rating against Xavier Rhodes this season, under 40, 39.2, as a matter of fact. That is the best in the NFL. So they did not like going his direction. And when they did, bad things happened. 5 interceptions. We're seeing one here. But let's get to the one against the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh,
which one? I mean, you were talking about 2 yards for a touchdown. You said numbers. How about these numbers, by the way? That interception return, I don't know if you've seen this. We have next-gen
right
stats
here.
At it's the
NFL right Network. Here. Here it is.
Remember that one?
Covered 121.3 yards at a top speed of 22.4 miles per hour.
This return. Miles an hour.
This return right here. 22 miles an hour. You can run 22 miles an hour?
Man, yes. To be honest, man, when I got the interception, I was running. The only thing I was thinking of at that moment was Brown behind me. So I was just thinking about Forrest Gump. Like, I have to run. Just run. Don't allow this guy to catch me. That's all
you
I was thinking.
Hey, Xavier Rhodes, I got to ask this. All right, so you're a Florida guy. I say this to every Viking and Lion I talk to. I think it's shameful that you guys don't rip the domes off that place and give yourselves the home field advantage of the freezing cold, right?
He's going to go with
no. No one wants to come up and play in that cold. No one wants that. What was the game like against the Seahawks last year?
Oh, my God. That was brutal. But, you know, at the same time, no matter what, you still have to play. No matter what the condition is, you know, you still have to go out there and play for the fans who spend their money and want to see us play. You know, we put on a good show for the fans, and they want to love the game. So no matter what, you got to still go out there and play.
Xavier Rhodes is with us. He's a Pro Bowler this season. That Vikings defense got off to a heck of a start. Injuries, though, attrition took its toll, specifically Adrian Peterson going down so early. What was it like on the team? Because you did find success early, but then it seemed like it finally caught up to you toward the end of the season.
I mean, it was adversity. We were trying to find a way to fight through adversity in the beginning of the season once Teddy and AD went down. It was pretty hard for us in the beginning. You know, we came together as a group, had a team meeting and told them what we need to do. You know, we need to sit there and hold each other back, you know, encourage each other and help out our offense and help out the defense in certain situations. You know, and that's what we did during that season.
True or false, you said like Ty Montgomery did in Green Bay, you said, hey, coach, if AD can't go, old 29 here can tote the rock for you. True or false?
Not a bad idea.
We saw that
22,
run.
22 miles? Come on now. Just give me a toss, man.
This is the only guy that makes number 29 look cool for a cornerback position. Because nobody else can rock
29.
Nobody else can rock 29.
All right, back on that. So I was talking to one of my teammates, Captain Munnell, and he's like, bro, you the only guy I know at corner with number 29 and make it look good. He said, I can't wear it. I would look completely terrible. They would go at me every play.
Yeah. Xavier, we do need a prediction. Who's going to win this Super Bowl and why?
Oh, man. Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Right. I'm going to go with Atlanta.
All right. Says the quarterback who knows the challenge that it's going to be to cover Julio and Taylor Gabriel and all of those guys. And also, you have something going on with Kids First Fund.
Yes. And that's something my head coach from Florida State, Jimbo Fisher, started. Being there with him and seeing little Ethan there growing up, it was kind of a shell shock for me to see him, you know, go through FA, going through the whole process, and going to Minnesota, knowing that's the place where they do all the research. I felt like it was only right, you know, by him, when I was at Florida State, open up his home, have me be with his family on certain holidays. Because, you know, when you're in college, you're not allowed to go back home because you have a game. You have to prepare for the game. And him open up his home for me and a couple other players, you know, and be able to, you know what I'm saying, feel the family vibe. And you gain that bond and that chemistry, family vibe from the coach's standpoint, you know, being with the coach's family. And seeing him go through that, I felt only right just to join and help him out and spread the word.
And you see, you can take part in that by visiting Kids with a Z First with the number 1stfund.com. Great work you're doing there. Congratulations on a great season, a Pro Bowl season, and much luck to you and success in the future, Xavier. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Maybe the only number 29, maybe to go into the Hall of Fame one day. Got to look that up.
I like that talk.
Plant those seeds.
All right, there's Xavier. I love the lockdown, shutdown, best corner in the league talk with him, you know, because being in the position that I'm in, working for a team, being charged with promoting the team, from the moment he stepped in here, I've been a fan of his and have been, you know, outspoken about that. And it was a rough go at first, you know, because the first snap of his career was in Detroit, and he was lined up against Calvin Johnson, and Calvin Johnson ran a quick slant. Before Calvin Johnson slanted inward, he had a one-arm shove of Xavier Rhodes, and Xavier was on his back. Calvin caught it for like a 9 or 8 yard gain. That was the first snap of his career. He's come a long way since then, and he's run the gamut of public opinion. At first, it was slow to go. Then he finished strong in 2013, and people slowly began to jump on the bandwagon. And after a great season, now a lot, you know, basically everyone is pro Xavier Rhodes. I don't know if he's a true shutdown, lockdown corner like we saw from Darrell Revis for all those years, but I do know that he has a chance to be that guy every single week if Mike Zimmer wants him to be, and that's a valuable piece for a defense.
Yeah, and it's been fun to see him progress and go from pass breakups to interceptions and game-changing plays just in the time that I've been here. One note about the 39.2 rating, I would get a 39.1 if I completed a pass to the dirt.
Right.
So that's where quarterbacks have had success. So 0.1 higher. Right. And if you change it and go further, deeper passes, the rating goes even lower.
Right.
You know. So, but he tackles well. I love the fact that he's so physical. He's figured out so many things, the techniques, how to best use his body. I thought he had a really nice game several times this season.
Yeah.
One of the matchups I have enjoyed in the past couple years, not this season, but was against Julio Jones.
Yeah, very good. Two big physical players for their position going at it, and he's had success against Julio as well.
Absolutely.
You know, Mike.
If you have.
Right. Mike Zimmer and his defense and Xavier being a big part of that. So, you know, again, it's not like, you know, Xavier's going to go out there and pitch a perfect game every single time, but he has the ability on any given week to throw a perfect game. And not every team has a corner like that.
Absolutely.
Some teams know that they have a corner who cannot do that. And the Vikings have one who they know can do that. And I think that's an important piece to Mike Zimmer's defense. Let's talk about the Super Bowl, guys. We're going to go through three different topics. A key matchup in the game for you. We're going to weigh in on some of the interesting prop bets that those who are into wagering can do. Or you can do them at your own Super Bowl party. You can, you know, put a board up and have everyone who comes to your Super Bowl party make a prediction. We're going to run through a few of those and then a final score prediction. So let's start with the key matchup. I'm going to go first. To me, it's Tom Brady against Dan Quinn. And Dan Quinn is obviously the Falcons head coach, but he was the defensive coordinator for the Seahawks and was the defensive coordinator for the Seahawks when the Patriots beat the Seahawks in a Super Bowl 2 years ago. So to me, that's the most intriguing matchup in this game, is how Tom Brady does against this defense, a defense he's seen before in the Super Bowl. Quite frankly, a defense that the last time he played this type of defense had a bunch of all pros at different positions, like Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and Michael Bennett and Bobby Wagner. The Falcons don't have any of those types of players. They have some good players like Vic Beasley, who's very good, Keanu Neal, who's a good young safety, but not to the level of what Seattle had 2 years ago in the Super Bowl. So how this young defense plays, led by Dan Quinn, their head coach, against a guy with as much Super Bowl equity as anyone in the history of the game, to me is the most interesting matchup in this game.
I'm gonna go next, so you don't steal mine, Craig. I'm going to go with the linebackers of the New England Patriots against the running backs from the Atlanta Falcons, because if you think about who else is there, if you think about like Julio Jones, he's probably gonna get his.
Yeah.
But also like New England's pass defense is pretty good too, so that'll be a good battle. But if you think about why, there's a lot of reasons, but if you think about one of the reasons Atlanta's been successful on offense is they've always been able to run the ball this season. And if it's not running the ball, it's passing to their running backs. So both running backs they have there have proved to be good all year and down the stretch through the playoffs. So that's going to be my matchup to watch, is the running backs against the linebackers for the New England Patriots.
I like it. Craig?
Well, I'll borrow from your ideology, and I'll go Matt Ryan versus Bill Belichick because, you know, it's Matt Ryan's first appearance on a stage this big. He had some detractors two weeks ago, and handled it very well. Yeah. I believe he's one of four guys to ever have six TD passes and zero interceptions heading into the game in the playoffs, and all three previous guys have won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So, but Bill Belichick is so good about neutralizing an opponent's strengths, even when they're strong strengths.
Right.
So it'll be really interesting to see how Coach Belichick tries to limit the damage that Matt Ryan has done this year.
I like that. People have to stop on the Matt Ryan and not having experience in the post. Like before the NFC Championship game, I was talking to one of my friends who's oddly enough a Packers fan. You know, I'm like, hey, how do you think the game's gonna go? You know, and he's like, you know, I think it's gonna be a good game, but I think we got the edge. I mean, Matt Ryan just hasn't proved it yet in the playoffs. You know, and I'm like, you know. Your defense is what it is, and you're gonna say like you're gonna rag on Matt Ryan right now in this matchup. Like you can pick against the Falcons. Don't say it's because of Matt Ryan. Like he's playing out of his mind good right now. Like Matt Ryan, if the Falcons win, it's gonna be because of Matt Ryan. Like, and if they lose, it's not gonna be because of Matt Ryan. So you gotta, I think that. So that is an interesting matchup. Can't wait for the game. I think it's going to be a close game. I think with 5 minutes to go, we're not going to know who's going to win. We'll get to our scores here in a minute. First, we're going to go through some of the prop bets. So I got a list of prop bets. We're going to be quick. We're each going to offer our prediction on these. Will either team score three unanswered times in the game? I will say yes. I think more games than not, surprisingly, have a string of three unanswered scores. And I think with as efficient as these offenses can be, if one slips up and turns it over, that's going to be two consecutive scores probably. So I think one team will get to three.
I'm going to agree with you. I say yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say the Patriots might and the Falcons might not.
Okay.
I'm hedging. Is that what they say?
It's the first one you're already hedging.
Yes. So you're leaning yes. That's how I take it.
Yeah.
Leaning yes.
You know me. I'm not... Okay. Well-versed.
Will there be a lead change in the second half? Nate, you go first.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I say yes as well. Will either team successfully convert a fourth down? Craig?
Brady with a quarterback sneak.
Okay.
Fourth and one. Like, they are masters at the sneak on very short yardage. And people know it's coming, and still, it works. Yep. I don't get it.
I'm saying yes. because it's Belichick. He goes for it on fourth down, I feel like, a lot. And I think it's going to be a close game, so it won't surprise me if a team needs to score on its last possession, and you know, then you're likely to have to go for it on fourth down.
I agree with both of you.
All right. Will either team successfully convert a two-point conversion? I am going to say no. Nate?
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. I think they just take the PAT.
Okay.
One of these I'm going to just choose to disagree, just so there's some disagreement.
It can't be on this one because you're due to go first.
Okay.
Over under, total turnovers in the game, the line is 2.5.
I'm going to go under.
I'll go over.
All right. I'll break the tie here, and I'm going to go under. Caliber quarterback. Will either coach be successful on a coach's challenge in the game? This does not include the final 2 minutes of each half where the booth reviews and can overturn. This is Quinn or Belichick pulling the red flag out of their sock, in Belichick's case, or out of wherever Dan Quinn happens to hold it. The Falcons weren't on TV a bunch this year. They will be next year. That's a matter for another day. But I don't know where Dan Quinn holds the red challenge flag, on his body, on his person. Belichick puts it in his sock, which is kind of a good place for it because you will never forget where it is. I mean, put something like the red challenge flag in your sock, and it will be something that you feel the whole time. You will never not know where it
but
is.
But doesn't he have the hoodie pocket?
Yeah, he does, but you might not feel it in there, though. Like, hoodies are, like, big and the flag is in your sock. Like, you know where it is.
Good point.
Yeah, so will either coach be successful in a coach's challenge? Craig?
I could see that happening. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I will say no.
I'm going to say no as well.
All right. This is fun. Now we're starting to disagree. Will there be a scoreless quarter in the game? The caveat to this is if you say yes, you get 6-1 odds. Two high-octane offenses. The number one offense in the NFL is Atlanta. The number two offense in the NFL is New England. People listening know that I tend to be a contrarian, so me citing those stats could be foreshadowing to me saying yes and taking those odds, but I'm saying no. There will not be a scoreless quarter in this game.
I want to say yes, but I'm going to go with no.
Okay. Craig?
Yeah, I'll say yes if it's the first quarter. But if not, I think that all other quarters are going to have points.
Okay.
It's one of those where you duke it out, you feel each other out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, finally, what color Gatorade will be splashed on the winning coach? Nate?
In our pre-production meeting, we actually went over a little caveat in this, which I don't know if you want me to explain,
yes,
but I will.
Please explain it, yeah.
There's also not the guarantee that there will be Gatorade splashed upon That's the coach true. Because especially in the case of the Patriots, if you think about it, this will if New England wins, it's what number Super Bowl for Bill Belichick? It will be five.
Five for him.
There.
So he's
right.
Yeah.
In New England, yes. Yep.
So he's
total?
Done this before.
Two with the Giants, yeah.
So it's nothing new.
Okay. Like
that's his job. As they preach, do your job. That's his job.
Then I think that if you engage in this prop, you lose, I would think.
Right.
I would think you lose. So, right. But we're asking you to pick a color.
Okay.
I've written mine down so you guys will know I'm not copying you.
I will go with orange.
Okay.
I mean, red. Both teams' colors have red.
I have red, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have red. I don't know what it was last year, but I feel like red is what it's going to be. Vikings-related story. George Edwards told me that, you know, we know he got the Gatorade bath at the East-West Shrine game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he told me that they didn't have showering facilities for them at the stadium in which they played.
Yeah.
And he had to ride the bus a half an hour back to the hotel wet.
He was cold. Yeah, yeah. And it was indoors, too. It wasn't in, like, sunny Florida right now to get at least some help from the sun. It was in the Trop Dome, and the AC was rolling. So, yeah, he had a cold bus ride.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds awful. All right, score predictions. I'm very predictably, I'm at 57 total points, 30-27 New England, with a score by Brady and company in the final 5 minutes and then a defensive stop by Belichick and company to win the game. So I'm at 30-27 in this game. Does anyone else care to offer?
I got something in mind, but I'll let you go first, Craig.
Okay.
No, please.
Okay. I will go 28-24. New England.
Oh, you went with, okay.
And I'm going to flip it. I was thinking 28-24 Falcons.
All
with
right.
The well, late charge, okay. Like the game-winning drive.
Awesome.
Down the stretch.
I'm very much looking forward to this Super Bowl. I mean, You know, there are Super Bowls that are not close. There are Super Bowls going into it, you think it's going to be close, and it's not. There are Super Bowls going into it, you think it's going to be a blowout, and it is. I think this is, we think it's going to be close, and it will be close.
It's tough because there's been a lot of matchups in the playoffs that you look at and you're like, yes, this is going to be a great game. But there's been like one or two really exciting down-to-the-wire games, no matter the cool matchup. So don't be tainted. Just enjoy the Super Bowl.
Yeah, enjoy it. I'm big Super Bowl snob guy. I do not like parties. I do not like people coming over. You guys are both invited to my house almost any time. Super Bowl Sunday is not one of those times. I'm a little bit of a snob on Super Bowl Sunday. Are you guys going to a party?
No plans yet. It's kind of nice just to, like I assume is the case for you, just to relax in your own home.
I love that.
And just eat whatever you want. You can use it as an excuse to eat something really terrible for you, which I probably will do.
Yeah.
But just enjoy the game. Enjoy the commercials. Enjoy the buildup. And it's the last football game we'll see for a long time. So if nothing else, there's that.
Well, if you do go to a party and miss the game, you can always look it up on Game Pass and revisit any parts that you missed. Last year, we did have the fortune of attending a neighbor's party. Shout out to the Bergs and Savage. Whoa. And, no, they had a great setup. But this year, we're late planners this year.
That's okay. You get to do that. You have the right to do that. So, all right. Enjoy the game, guys. Listeners out there who have made it all the way to the end of this podcast, thank you for doing that. That's amazing that you did. We hope you enjoy the game as well. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Wobcast. We'll break down the Super Bowl. We'll continue to look ahead to the Vikings offseason. Nate and I will probably rehash our favorite commercials from the Super Bowl, which we will have rewatched on YouTube or NFL.com many times. Maybe we can get Craig to weigh in on that as well. And we'll have lots more to discuss next week. But until then, on behalf of Craig Peters and producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. Thanks for listening to the Wobcast. Enjoy Super Bowl Sunday, and we'll talk to you next week. So, yeah, I start with